I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Back in on the drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll take a trip inside the mind of the machine. We're very happy to be joined by our next guest. His name is Steve Tasker. He is a former Buffalo Bills All-Pro. He also is the co-host of One Bills Live on WGR Sports Radio 550 in Buffalo. Steve, appreciate you coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Steve, let's start here. We need you to settle a debate. We were having this before you came on the show. We were talking about the movie Goonies, and we were talking about, do you think kids today would actually enjoy Goonies? What do you think?
Depends on the age. Maybe some younger kids under 6 or 7 years old would enjoy it. I don't know that a kid above 9 or 10 would. There's a gray area there, but I agree. There should be a debate had. Goonies was a great movie when it came out. I know this because when my wife and I have 5 children, and they're all grown now, but when they were little, we would take road trips, and from Buffalo all the way back to Kansas, where all my family and my wife's family, they all still live. So we would take road trips back there, and I listened to Goonies no less than a dozen times, and I've never seen it on the screen, but I've heard it on soundtrack because the kids listen to it every trip. So I think, yeah, it might hold water for some kids.
Steve, go home and watch it tonight. I mean, if you have nothing better to do, it'll completely change your life. And I'm all for the tape movies and stuff, because my grandparents did that on the drive to Lake of the Ozarks many a time. But do me a favor and just watch that movie tonight. You'll thank me.
Okay, I'll do it.
Right now we're talking to Steve Tasker, joining us on the show today, former Buffalo Bills All-Pro. Steve, let's just start here. What happened last night to the Bills?
There's a bunch of things that happened to them. I mean, I think mostly, if you want to just talk nuts and bolts of why they got beat by, 25, most of it has to do with the 3 turnovers they committed. One, right on the opening drive of the game, where they, threw a quick pick and give the ball to Ryan Tannehill and the Titans inside their 15-yard line. That gives them a touchdown. Then they fumble. Then they throw. Josh throws one bad pick in the second half where they were grinding out a drive, trying to get back into that game. Threw up a pick and almost turned to a pick 6. That was down deep in their end as well. Then, of course, a late fumble on a kick return by Andre Roberts. But 3 turnovers turning into 21 points is really the story of that game. But I think on a larger scale, Sean McDermott, head coach, off the Andy Reid coaching tree, those guys know how to motivate their players. They know how to get them ready to play. But most guys know how to get their players ready to play when they exactly know what they're getting them ready for. This is a Bills team that went through an entire week of not knowing what they were going to be doing over the weekend. They didn't know if they would play, if they would play the Chiefs, or if they were going to play the Titans. They didn't know if they were going to play the Chiefs on Thursday or Sunday or Monday or Saturday. They didn't know if they were going to play the Titans on Sunday, Monday, or, as it turned out, Tuesday. And it got that finish line got moved 3 or 4 times and really sabotaged their ability to bring any emotional content to that game last night. They showed up flat. Tennessee, on the other hand, showed up like they were on a free spring break trip. All the flights and hotels were taken care of. All the meals were taken care of. They had an open tab at the bar. Tennessee went on vacation. They got furloughed off death row last night, and they played like it. And that was the difference in the emotion of that game.
Steve, let's talk about the quarterback of the Buffalo Bills. I actually think the three most polarizing players right now in the NFL, well, Dak Prescott was in that conversation. Obviously, he just got injured, so speedy recovery to him. Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen. I can acknowledge as someone who isn't a big believer in Josh Allen that he has improved in the passer, but I have real questions about ball security. What do you make of how he played last night, and do you think that's indicative of sort of his progress as a player?
Well, he took a step forward that even his supporters didn't envision this year. Completing 70% of his passes, nobody really thought that was in the cards for him in his career. And yet he shows up and does it this year. Now, he was a guy who – he's a really sharp guy. His teammates love him. He's got all the leadership skills. They play hard for him. They want him to be successful. He never points the finger at anybody but himself. He empowers his teammates to be better. He's got all that stuff, right? And – one thing he also has is he has the desire to be great. He wants to be really good. And when you mix hard work and intelligence together and commitment like he's got to get better. I think this year, though, with the addition of Steph Diggs and Gabriel Davis for the Bills and their wide receiving core, Josh and his entire offense took an enormous quantum leap forward that really nobody could anticipate. I think the change is real, though. I think Josh is what he seems to be. Certainly there are going to be nights like last night that are not going to go great, but he went from a guy that never threw for 300 yards to a guy that you expect him 300 yards out of him every week now. You expect 68 to 72% completion percentage. He rarely, up until last night, I mean, he rarely throws interceptions. He had 26 TDs to 4 interceptions over his last 16 games before last night. The guy has just gotten better and better, and I think he reached somewhere along this last off season and during the weapons that were added around him, somewhere he reached critical mass and now belongs in that conversation with guys like Mahomes and Rodgers and Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson, those kind of guys. He's right there with them, or at least he has been, and I think he will continue to be throughout this season.
Of course, back in the day, your Bills teams went to 4 straight Super Bowls, so you know what it's like to make it to the final game. How surprised would you be if this Buffalo Bills team this season is able to overcome a really wide open AFC team, including the Chiefs and the Ravens and the two past MVPs, and actually make it to the Super Bowl?
Well, I don't know if I'd be surprised, but I know this. A lot of things got to go their way for that to happen, just like they do for every team. You know, you look at the Chiefs last year, they won the Super Bowl. And, you know, 2 years ago, they got to be kicking themselves for not going there that year.
Absolutely.
Even the good teams who have no reason to think they're not doing anything but going to the Super Bowl, they'll acknowledge they got to have a lot of things go their way. The right guys have to stay healthy. You got to get a couple of bounces. You got to have, you know, got to cut down on your own mistakes that don't beat you, that kind of thing. So, yeah, this Bills team can compete with anybody they play on a week-to-week basis. But all that being said, if you do get into the playoffs, everything rides on that one single game. And if one thing goes bad at the wrong time, it's all over. So, yeah, I would not be surprised that they've got the talent. They've got enough pieces in place. Their coaching staff is there. They're stable. They've got enough veteran. They've got enough veterans on the team. They've got enough depth on the team. But I think they're one of maybe double-digit teams that could go to the Super Bowl this year. We'll see, though. If a lot of things got to go their way, and certainly they're going to have to play better than they did last night.
Steve, what do you think their game plan is going to be going into Monday Night Football? Because we saw the Raiders, and Carrington, my co-host, pointed out that a lot of teams don't really try to get into shootouts or go toe-to-toe with the Chiefs, but it was very effective for them. And actually, you could argue that Derek Carr was better than Patrick Mahomes on that day. Do you think that's what Buffalo's going to try to do, is let Josh Allen outsling Patrick Mahomes?
Well, I think you got to score. I don't think there's any question about it. I think the one thing that stood out to me about the Raiders, yeah, certainly John Gruden and Derek Carr, I think they were on a little bit of a vision quest. They wanted to beat Kansas City in Kansas City for the first time in Carr's career. I think that was a little bit of a big deal to them. And you could tell even when they got up by 2 scores in the fourth quarter, they continued to keep their foot on the gas. So I think you can know that the Bills are going to try and do that. They're going to try and keep their foot on the gas. And in this league, in the NFL, the atmosphere that's going around, It's hard to play defense. It's hard to keep teams off the scoreboard. It's hard to get them off the field on third down. It's hard to not give them first down. You almost have to wait for the offense to drop a pass on third down. Defense this year in the NFL is about getting turnovers if you can, knocking the ball loose and covering it up, and hoping you can get a pass defensed on a third and medium or third and long. The game is not about rushing the passer anymore, although those happen. You know, guys happen like that. It's about turnovers this year for defenses around the NFL. Run defenses are secondary in nature to just making the team go the long way. The league defensively in the last couple of years has really made the switch to it's less about getting after the passer than it is about covering them up on the back end and getting in the quarterback's way. I think that's where the league is right now. So when you talk about what the Bills need to do with Kansas City, I think you got to play what the NFL is this year. Take advantage of the no holding calls, that kind of thing. Keep your foot on the gas and score, and then hope you can knock a pass away or maybe get a tipped interception and get one or two more possessions than the Chiefs have.
That is Steve Tasker joining us on the show today, former Buffalo Bills All-Pro, and he's also the co-host of One Bills Live. You can catch that on WGR Sports Talk Radio 550 in Buffalo. Steve, man, really good talking to you. Thanks for coming on today.
Appreciate it, guys. Great talking to you.
That is Steve Tasker joining us on the show today. We'll react to what he has to say coming up on the other side. We'll also take a trip inside the mind of the machine. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Coming up in about 10 minutes or so, we'll continue to celebrate Stephen A. Smith's birthday. He is an American hero. He will be treated as such on this show. We'll also talk about Mecole Hardman and his need to step up as the Chiefs will be without Sammy Watkins for an unknown period of time. That's coming up at the bottom of the hour. But before that, let's take a trip inside the mind of the machine.
So in last night's Tuesday night football game, Derrick Henry just tossed Josh Norman like a toothpick. Should Norman have just turned in his man card right then and there on the spot?
Norman's actually been embarrassed multiple times in this scenario. If you remember, he got beat up by Cam Newton, and then yesterday he got beat up by Derrick Henry. I think more than anything, it just shows you there aren't many NFL players that I think other players are afraid of. Derrick Henry is on that list. Like, if I was an NFL player and I saw him come in my direction, I wouldn't want anything to do with it. The same way, if Aaron Donald was running at me, I wouldn't want anything to do with it. Some people are just different. Derrick Henry is different.
Have you ever been hit with a slapped in the face with a dog's tail that's like 145 pounds? That ever happened to you?
No, I can't remember a time that's happened.
That makes sense because you're not around dogs like I am. But it happens to me all the time. I got a giant-ass dog. And that's what it would be like if Derrick Henry's giant ponytail thing was to hit you in the face. Like, that thing itself looks like it weighs 25 pounds. Yeah, he's a scary dude. You don't see guys like that running the football downhill the way that he does. But back to Josh Norman for a second. Quite frankly, I always thought he was just a little bit overrated. Chandler Jones is out for the season while we're talking a little bit of NFL football. Who's the better athlete in that Jones family, Chandler or his brother, Johnny Bones Jones?
I don't really know a whole lot about John Jones. Every time I hear about him, he's getting into some kind of trouble. Like, that's the only time that I ever really hear about John Jones. Like, people like you tell me how good he is, but the only time that his name ever pops up, he's getting busted for something.
That's so sad. It really is, because a sports fan like you, that I know you'll watch the big fights, and we've watched John Jones fights together, and man, I'm telling you, he's the best that's ever done it, but everybody's going to remember him, like you just said, as just a dude that was always finding himself in trouble.
Chandler Jones actually does have one of my favorite stories, that he got so high that he went outside the police department to tell them that he was high. Like, I just can't imagine what you're on. They said he was on K2. I've never used K2 before.
That's the fake weed stuff.
Yeah, I've never used K2 before. I don't have any interest in using K2, but if anything makes you high enough that as an African-American, you go in front of the police department to tell them that you were on something, that just doesn't sound like anything you need to put into your body.
That was a thing for a while, that K2 stuff. I don't know why. If weed was at a shortage or whatever it was.
Because it's obviously getting you higher than what regular weed does.
Not good higher, though. Like, crazy higher. Like, you turn yourself into police station higher. There's a lot of stories like that.
He went to the police station to tell them that he was high.
That's not the high that I want.
What are you on?
K2. I thought we got to the bottom of that one. Usher turns 42 years old today. By the way, do you know how old Stephen A. Smith is?
I don't know. I don't need to know.
Rob, how old do you think Stephen A. Smith is?
Oh, we're actually playing the game? I don't know.
I figured we'd switch it. Yeah, why not?
I'll say he's 56.
That's actually a really strong guess. I'm going to go 58.
He's 53 years old.
Congrats to Stephen A., man.
Looking good.
We'll keep going.
See, I give Stephen A. a lot of credit. I know the text line hates him, but I give Stephen A. a lot of credit.
Today is also the Fonz's birthday. Actually, that's later on this week.
I've actually met him before.
You know the Fonz?
I mean, I wouldn't say I know him, but I have met the man before and shaken his hand before.
Well, then you know the Fonz.
He was a kind individual the time that I met him.
What was he promoting?
Real name?
Huh? Henry Winkler. What was he promoting when you met him?
He was down in the lobby for something. I don't really remember what it was. I think he was on like Johnny Dare station and he was just there. And then,
Fonz was hanging out down in our lobby.
You haven't been here whenever there's a celebrity here. Like whenever somebody famous is here, the energy in the building is just very different. So like everybody wanted to meet him and take a picture. And I was just walking into the building and he was there. And I was like, oh, hey, I recognize you. I actually was like, oh, you're the guy from Scream. This is when I remembered him first. And I was like, oh, yeah, you're also in The Water Boy. Then I was like, oh, yeah, you're on that show Happy Days.
That is weird when that happens. Jason Sudeikis, I ran into him once in our bathroom. And we talked about the difference between having like a hand, like blow dryer thing. You know, like those things that are on the side of the wall versus an actual paper towel dispenser. It was a very riveting conversation with Jason Sudeikis.
The most random occurrence I've ever had in meeting a celebrity was actually Joe Torre, former manager of the Yankees.
Here?
No, it was actually at Kauffman Stadium. It was during the All-Star game. I was getting onto the elevator for something, and next thing I know, it opens up, and Joe Torre was right there. And
that's cool. That's
good. And we talked for about
nice guy
45 seconds, and I said a joke, and he laughed at it. I felt very accomplished in 2012 when I did that, and yeah, that was our whole interaction with one
again
another.
Again, at the Super Bowl, and I don't know if it's fair to go back there because Radio Row was just like utopia.
Target-rich environment for famous people.
It was insane, but BK and I were there, and we got a shot of espresso between Barry Sanders and Deion Sanders. Like, it's just a different place there. Anyway, how old do you say the Fonz was? Your boy?
72.
Yeah, I think he's a little older than that, 81.
81? No, he's 75. Marcus Mariota, it's his birthday today.
He's young. 29.
Okay, he's going to get mad at me because I'm going to do the math. Let's do it. He was the Heisman Trophy winner in 2016, which was the first year which made him 22. I'll say he's 27 today.
26. And sucks at football. Back to Usher real quick.
I actually thought he was going to be Kaepernick. Like early Kaepernick, that's what I thought Marcus Mariota was going to be.
He was for a cup of coffee.
Yeah, I liked Mariota. I actually think the injuries kind of took his confidence away. He had a really strong sophomore season.
Yeah, his problem is I think that his touchdown to interception ratio is about even, if not negative, and that's not going to work when you're an NFL quarterback. I was mentioning Usher turns 42. Start him, sit him, cut him, just based on their talent, C-Dot
Usher's
alone.
Number one. I don't know who else is on this list.
Bruno Mars and Justin Timberlake.
That's a good list.
Yeah, I actually think Usher's more talented than the rest of those two individuals. I think he could just dance a lot better than the others two. I'd probably rank it Usher 1. I'd actually put Bruno 2 and Justin Timberlake. I really enjoy Justin Timberlake. I think his catalog is a little bit more limited as a solo artist than people want to acknowledge.
He's bringing sexy back. How many of those guys?
I actually saw him in concert once. It was a really good show. I saw him the 2020 experience when he's at Sprint Center. I saw that one. I didn't want to go to the Man of the Woods. I wasn't checking out for his Cabela's album. I wasn't trying to hear anything he was talking about on that album.
2020 is a great album, too, by the way.
It's fantastic.
Have you seen Bruno Mars live?
I have not. Bruno Mars was actually the one concert where I was like, my guy's going to come through. My guy's going to come through. I called my guy. He cannot come through.
He didn't come through.
I wasn't trying to pay what he wanted to come through for the come through price. And I was like, it's okay.
Have I ever told you about the time I went to the Up and Smoke tour?
You have certainly told us that story before.
Before we get out of the mind of the machine, there's a Peyton Manning pic that is circulating where, I'm not joking, dude's got like a six pack. He looks like he's about 30 years old. Do you think Peyton Manning would be a better coach or a better analyst in his future?
I don't think that Peyton Manning is really that interested in having a job. Like, I think if Peyton Manning wanted to do those things, that he could very easily
do those things, and
people would hire him. I think he's more concerned with just being Peyton Manning, which if you've made as much money as he had, and think about it, he makes more money being the spokesperson for Nationwide Insurance than he is for doing any of those other jobs. So I don't think Peyton's ever going to work in football. I think he's going to keep doing all this other stuff and just keep being Peyton Manning.
Besides Patrick Mahomes, when it comes to NFL players that have played in the last 10 years, you might still see his face second, would you say, when it
Baker's
comes to commercials?
In a lot of commercials.
Which makes absolutely no sense for how good he is. He's in like a bunch of he's in insurance commercials and he's in the Hulu commercials. Is he likable though?
Yeah, I mean I like Baker Mayfield. I also think
he seems very everymanish. I'll give him that.
Yeah, I mean I think
I think the college that he went to plays a major deal. I also think that there aren't many young, good white quarterbacks in the NFL too, also plays a factor. Like, most of the good quarterbacks who are under the age of 30 are all black. Like, so I think if Baker showed you a little bit of promise, I think that makes him more marketable.
It is kind of weird how you see Pat everywhere, and then you see Baker more than you see Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson. Dak's been on some stuff in the past. Cam Newton was on a couple of things. He got himself in trouble, and then I think, didn't he actually have to turn one of his endorsements over to Dak?
Yeah, Dak got it. Oh, he didn't turn it over. They fired him, and they hired
him. I think it's like Dan and Yogurt. Mm-hmm. So, it was. Yeah, but Pat's got 10 times more than the next quarterback does, whoever that is. And that's the Mind of the Machine, brought to you by 7th Street Casino. 7th Street Casino is where it's at.
Coming up next, we'll continue to celebrate Stephen A. Smith's birthday. We'll also talk about Mecole Hardman. And now, with Sammy Watkins out once again, it is time for the second-year wide receiver out of Georgia to step up. Stick around. It's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we will play Bet It or Forget It regarding the Kansas City Chiefs, and we'll also go through the Le'Veon Bell odds as where people think that Le'Veon Bell could end up as a member in the NFL, as he was cut yesterday by the New York Jets. We'll also head to New York to catch up with somebody who covered the Jets to find out how much he has potentially left in the tank. I told you we are celebrating Stephen A. Smith's birthday here on The Drive.
Stephen A., the floor is yours first.
Nothing ever goes right. Nothing ever goes right for us. Last time the New York Knicks won a championship, I was 5 years old. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm 51. Leave it to the New York Knicks. I mean, you just get the Knicks can't catch a break to save their damn lives.
I can really relate to Stephen A. Smith growing up a lifelong fan of a team that you're not sure is ever going to win. Happy birthday to Stephen A. Smith, who turns, well, how old do you say Stephen A. is today? 53?
53.
53 years old. Happy birthday to Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah, happy birthday. Well, maybe, I guess, what, keep playing his audio the rest of the show? I'm looking forward to that.
Coming up in just a little bit, we will play Bet It or Forget It. Let's talk about your favorite player, Mecole Hardman. These are your two favorite players, Sammy Watkins. I mean, Sammy Watkins always takes a week 4, week 5, week 6 just break. I mean, you should just go ahead and factor this into the season. The same way that the leaves start to change, you know that Sammy Watkins is going to be out week 7 of the NFL season. That is like clockwork. He is out. He is injured. Hopefully he has a speedy recovery, but they really just need him back for the postseason. Now the expectation is on Mecole Hardman to step up in Watkins' absence.
You say it kind of tongue-in-cheek, but I was looking back
at it. It's true. I'm not saying it tongue-in-cheek. It's a fact. Sammy Watkins has always hurt the middle part of the season. The last 5 years, he has been hurt the middle part of the season. You can set your watch to it. You can set your clock to it. He is going to be hurt at this part in the season. The Chiefs should factor it in. He's going to be gone.
In fact, every year but one, he has missed time, and it pretty much has been right around now, like week 5 or 6. I don't know if it's when the weather starts to get cold and the leaves change. He just feels like, hey, I'm cool. I'm going to take a couple of weeks off. Let the boss know I need a little bit of that paid vacation. Now, this is a great opportunity, though, for Mecole Hardman. And I'll admit, as a Mecole Hardman fan, I've thrown out every excuse possible. I've said that the reason that they drafted him was because Tyreek Hill was dealing with all that crap, and so they tried to find a replacement at the time. And I talked about how the reason I didn't think that he got on the field that much last year is because they were paying the aforementioned Sammy Watkins $20 million. And if you pay a guy that much money, you got to actually use him. But at this point, the next 3 or 4 games, or how long Sammy Watkins is out for, this is a perfect opportunity for Hardman to be an actual impact player on this offense, which isn't easy to do. I mean, when you play with Patrick Mahomes and they draft Edwards-Helaire and they got the best tight end and they've got a target like Tyreek Hill, it's tough to work your way up that ladder. But now's an opportunity, and I'm not just talking about the big play. Like, if Hardman goes out there and has a 75-yard touchdown, cool, it's going to help an offense that really struggled the last half, so I have no problem with that. But I want to see actual consistent production. More than the 75-yard play, I'll take the 30-yard touchdown and then maybe 4 or 5 catches and seeing him actually get involved. And if he doesn't over those next 4 weeks, then I'll admit that you and some other people who have basically called Hardman a gadget player are right.
Yeah, but I mean, to me, I think the conversation is really twofold. Is he going to be a gadget player when everybody is there? Because last year, the early part of the season, I thought Mecole Hardman did a really good job. You remember, Watkins was the number one wide receiver. Tyreek Hill dislocated his shoulder in the game against Jacksonville, so he was limited for the better part of the early half of the season. I thought Sammy Watkins had a role, like dating back to week 2 last year against the Raiders. He had the 4 catches for 61 yards, had that long touchdown catch against Baltimore, 2 catches for 97 yards, had another long touchdown catch. He had four catches for 79 yards last year against the Colts. Like, he was a factor in the early part of the season once there were injuries and they were kind of shuffling the deck chairs just a little bit. But once everybody got healthy, they put Mecole Hardman back on the shelf. So I don't really have much of a concern whether he can step up in this scenario. Now that he's going to be a bigger part of the offense, I think they'll throw him the ball 5 to 7 times. He'll have 3 to 4 catches. He'll make a couple of plays. My thing's going to be, once Tyreek Hill is established as the one, once Sammy Watkins get back, there's no reason to believe this is a season-long injury. This is the same thing that we always go through. Watkins is only going to play in 11 games. Once he comes back, is there a defined role for Mecole Hardman in this year? But I don't have any question whether they're going to use him or not in this injury. I do think he'll be part of the offense.
Well, last year when Tyreek Hill was out, every wide receiver stepped up, not consistently, but at least for a game. If you remember, Sammy Watkins had 3 touchdowns in that first game, and that's when Tyreek Hill got hurt. Byron Pringle had a big game in there. DeMarcus Robinson had one of those huge games. Mecole Hardman had a couple of them. So a bunch of guys stepped up in Hill's absence last year. But I to answer that second part of your question, like, once everybody's healthy, I still think then Mecole Hardman goes back to maybe gets more targets than a healthy Sammy Watkins if you're talking about everybody's healthy. But at this point, I think that we've seen that he's a big play type of guy and that he's a guy that can fill in when other guys get hurt. But we haven't really seen any indication between year one and year two that he's ready to go when everybody's healthy.
Yeah, we'll certainly see. I mean, I would love to see at some point sort of the evolution of that. You're right. I would say at this point, through the first 21 games of Mecole Hardman's career, I think we know exactly what he is. Is he going to be a guy that, once Sammy Watkins moved on, that you trust to consistently be a number two option for this team and a guy you think can get open and create space for other guys? Like, that's the thing to me that I don't think we give Sammy Watkins enough credit for, is I think he makes the game easier for Sammy Watkins. I think he does some of the dirt, for Tyreek Hill. I think Watkins does some of the dirty work that you don't want your speedster number one wide receiver to do. I think some of the underneath stuff, some of the over the middle stuff, some of the stuff on third down where, when a lot of the attention is on Tyreek beating you deep, he can make that play underneath. Can Mecole start to make that play consistently? I don't think he can, and that's why I think he's really struggled to get on the field.
There's no question that Sammy Watkins makes things easier and that Patrick Mahomes likes him. I think that's part of the reason why he eventually ended up coming back this year, because he had other options. But I think that right now the Chiefs need somebody to step up for the next few games in his absence and actually be productive, because this offense, C-Dot, for whatever reason, does not look like the offense that I was talking about heading into the season. Have they at certain times? Yeah. Did they for most of the game versus Baltimore? Sure. But I would argue that we've seen a bad Chiefs offense as much as we've seen a good Chiefs offense. And even though Buffalo just lost, if that up and down offense is what shows up on Monday night, they're probably going to lose again.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll be joined by Andy Vasquez. He said this about Le'Veon Bell and how much he could potentially sign for with his next team.
I think he'll come in at the minimum. Like, you can get him at the minimum, because he's already getting, it's not going to go to him at this point. Like, he's going to get probably what he gets from the Jets no matter what. Like, he's owed $6 million by the Jets. So whatever he signs for comes off of the Jets tab. I think he's better. Like, he can sign for the minimum, like $600 or whatever it is, like right now. And then he'll look for more, unless the team wants to sign him to a multi-year deal right now, but I don't think that'll happen.
So we'll learn more about Le'Veon Bell from Andy Vasquez, who covers the Jets for the USA Today, coming up in a little bit. I mean, that's what really excites me about Le'Veon Bell and why I think it would make a lot of sense here in Kansas City. I think the play style certainly fits. I think he's the kind of running back that Andy Reid gets the most out of. I also think that the cost is going to be right too. No team, regardless if it's the Chiefs, if it's the Patriots, whatever team ends up signing Le'Veon Bell, it's not going to be a financial commitment. The Jets have already made that. He's still due $5.5 million. You sign him to a veteran deal, and then you allow him at the end of the season. You're not franchise tagging him. And then you allow him to go get that big-time contract from somebody else. But if you're Le'Veon Bell and your reputation is starting to take a hit, whether it was how you left Pittsburgh and whether what's happened with the New York Jets, signing with a strong organization would make a lot of sense to sort of rehabilitate your career. I'm on board with trying to get Le'Veon Bell.
I'm about as interested in Le'Veon Bell as I am signing Rob's boy, Kendrell Bell. Like, honestly, you don't need him for this team. Last year, the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, and they had Damian Williams is their feature back. You always give us a stat that they're one of the worst rushing teams to ever win a Super Bowl. Well, they're better now. They got Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Now, again, if you can get him for pennies on the dollar and he understands that he's a backup and he's not going to, you know, ruffle the feathers at all for probably the best locker room chemistry in the entire NFL, then maybe you take a flyer on him, I suppose. But I will say this, Le'Veon Bell should have a lot more interest in coming to Kansas City than Kansas City should have in talking to Le'Veon Bell.
I would assume you want the Chiefs to turn into what the Patriots used to be. Sure. This is the kind of move that the Patriots used to do. The Patriots used to take other teams' trash, and then they would squeeze the last little bit of juice left out of that career. I know the Brady and Belichick Patriots would be all over Le'Veon Bell.
But they had to fill holes differently because they weren't as talented. Like, no Patriots team up and down, none of the teams that ever won the Super Bowl with Tom Brady are as talented as this team. Like, even if you want to say the Brady team that had all those defensive names that we know with Willie McGinnis and Ty Law and Mike Vrabel and all those different dudes, even the team with Randy Moss, none of them were as talented as this team. So when you have the roster that the Chiefs have, you don't need to win the same way that the Patriots did. Yeah, the Patriots probably would have needed to get this guy because they were probably doing it with patchwork and somehow still having a good running game. And they go, okay, cool, we can add this guy like they did with the Corey Dillon. That's not what the Chiefs need to do. And not to mention, Le'Veon Bell, the last time we saw him, he averaged 3.1 yards per carry. And the year before that, he didn't play. So I just don't think he's that good anymore.
Coming up in a little bit, we'll be joined by Andy Vasquez to find out how much more Le'Veon Bell has left in the tank. But let's play a very simple game called Bet It or Forget It.
Vegas has set the line. But is it worth the bet? It's time to Bet It or Forget It on The Drive.
We'll start Better Forget It with the aforementioned Le'Veon Bell. Some odds are out on where he may land. The Bears plus 400, the Steelers plus 600, your Kansas City Chiefs at plus 650, or the Cleveland Browns at plus 700. Better to forget it, Sean.
If I have to bet one of these, I guess that maybe the Browns make some sense. I mean, they've got the injury in the running back stable, and now they're a team that looks like they're the real deal, and they've shown that they like to not just put one or two running backs out there, but they'd be cool with three. And Rob, if I can get 7-1 odds on them, like, I'm the guy that plays the odds, right? And it's probably why I lose a bunch of my money. But I look at some of these teams, the Steelers at plus 600. What? Do we not remember what happened there? There's no chance he goes back to the Steelers. The Chiefs at plus 650, I'd be very surprised if the Chiefs actually flirted with Le'Veon Bell. Like, we can have the conversation for the rest of the show, but I'd be very surprised if it actually happens. The Bears make a little bit of sense, but I think I'll bet my money on the Cleveland Browns at 7-1.
I actually like one team that's not on here that I think you can get decent odds on. I would say Tennessee for plus 1,000, I think actually makes a lot of sense. I think you sort of want to limit some of the wear and tear on Derrick Henry. I also think at this point, if you're Le'Veon Bell and the money is already there, you want to sign up with a team that gives you a chance to win. I think Tennessee would give you a chance to win. They're 4-0 right now. They went to the AFC Championship game. You know you're not going to get a lot of the wear and tear. And Henry doesn't really help you as much in the passing game as Le'Veon Bell could. Really established offensive line, really strong head coach, really good locker room. I think the Tennessee would make a lot of sense for Le'Veon Bell. So in this game, I'll take him at plus 1,000. Le'Veon Bell goes to the Tennessee Titans.
We move away from Le'Veon Bell into MVP. The odds are out as of right now to win MVP. Let Russ cook. Russell Wilson is the leader in the clubhouse at plus 700. Excuse me, plus 170. Aaron Rodgers at plus 285. Patrick Mahomes at plus 300. Or Josh Allen at plus 1,000. Sean, better forget it.
Well, Russell Wilson should be the favorite because his stats are ridiculous, and we all know that he's never got the MVP vote at all. Like, it's not like he hasn't won the MVP. He's never got a vote for MVP, and we know that award works. So he's probably the best money, Rob, even though you can't make a bunch on it. Josh Allen's an interesting one. If you would have asked me this yesterday during the show, I would have put my money on Josh Allen. But after seeing what I did last night, yeah, no, I don't think that guy's going to be the MVP this year. It's weird when you see a guy's stats and then you actually watch a full game and you just see two completely different guys. Like, I remember Phillip Rivers a couple of years ago had a really good season, but he threw like 8 interceptions in his 2 games against the Chiefs. And I was thinking, how is that possible? Every time I watch him, he looks terrible. And that's what I saw from Josh Allen last night. So even though I can't make a bunch of money on it, see that I think I'm going to bet Russell Wilson the favorite at plus 170.
Yeah, I think right now at MVP, I think you take Russell and Aaron Rodgers, and then you would take the field. Like, I feel pretty strongly that those two guys are probably going to win NFL MVP. Mahomes always has a chance because he's the best player in the league, and he's going to put up big numbers. Like, Mahomes might throw for 4,500 yards and have 39 touchdowns this year and 8 interceptions, so he obviously has a chance to do it. But I do think it's very much a media narrative award, and I think the media direction is much more in Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers than it's blowing in Patrick Mahomes' direction. So if you had to say right now Russell and Aaron in the field, I think you'd rather bet your money there. So I think the money is better else spent. I also rather just take the better odds. Mahomes at plus 300, decent odds. I'd rather take Josh Allen. It's got a lot of big games left, and I think Buffalo's going to be a playoff team. I don't think he's going to win, but if you're going to bet on this, I'd rather just lay $10 down on Josh Allen and win 100.
Our final one, the Super Bowl odds are out. Chiefs betting favorite at plus 450. The Ravens at plus 550. The aforementioned Seahawks at plus 750. And the Packers at plus 1,000. Sean, bet it or forget it.
You know, I can't really tell you right now, Rob, if the AFC or the NFC is the muddier conference. What I mean by that is more teams that could actually get there. At the beginning of the season, I would have said, well, it's definitely the NFC, because I thought that teams like the Seahawks and the Packers and the Saints and the Rams and some of these other teams had a chance. Well, right now, half the NFC looks like they can get there. And in the AFC, even though the Chiefs are 4-1, there are 5 other teams that have the same record or better. So it's really wide open right now through the first 5 games. So all that being said, I'm going to take the Chiefs. If I can get them at plus 450, I'm going to put my money on the Kansas City.
I don't think that's a bad play. I think they're by far the best odds right now. And if you think they're the best team in the league to get them at plus 450, I think that.
What can I get the Browns at? What's Cleveland?
You're ready to put some money on Cleveland to win the Super Bowl?
I mean, if I can get them at like maybe still, I want 25-1 odds. If I can get them at 25-1.
I just want to hear you say, I believe Cleveland has a chance to win the Super Bowl. That's all I really want.
The Browns are currently going off at plus 3,100.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to hear you say it. Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns have a chance to win the Super Bowl.
Right, but do the math. Like 3,100. So let's say it's like close to 33. That gives them, what, a 2% chance of winning the Super Bowl. So I'll say
same odds as the Titans, by the way.
If it makes you feel better. Really? If it makes you feel better, I'll say it. The Cleveland Browns have a 2% chance of winning the Super Bowl. Are you happy?
I would take Seattle at plus 750 if I had to bet. I think Kansas City, like, if you think Kansas City is going to win the Super Bowl, you might not get a better chance than right now to bet them. I mean, you probably would then hope in terms of a betting standpoint they lose to Buffalo so their odds get a little bit better, and then you can get the Chiefs at maybe plus 600, and then you jump all over it. Like last year, if you had bet in October that the Chiefs would fix things, you would have got them at by far the best odds. Like, you probably won't get a better chance to bet the Chiefs. I think plus 450 is a really smart bet for Kansas City.
Yeah, I still like my Cleveland Browns at the 2%. I don't understand how Cleveland and Tennessee have the best chance. Like, we're going to talk about who we think is the biggest threat in the entire NFL to the Chiefs later on in the show. Dude, those Tennessee Titans might come up in the conversation. That win last night was very, very impressive.
Let's head to the phone lines right now and be joined by Andy Vasquez. He covers the New York Jets for NorthJersey.com. He also covers them for USA Today. Andy, appreciate you coming on today. How much left do you think that Le'Veon Bell has in the tank?
Well, it's really hard to say because we just didn't see. I don't think we got like a good sense of what he could do with the Jets because their offensive line was so bad. And obviously he was not a good fit in Adam Gase's offense, and they couldn't get him involved in the passing game, which is where I think he still probably has the most left. So I think when you look at him, he does not look like the guy he was in Pittsburgh. It's just, even with a bad offensive line and with what the Jets had, they had it going offensively a couple times last year, and he never had a run longer than 19 yards. I think he had a long one in Cincinnati. It was called back, but never had a run that counted for more than 19 yards, and never had a pass catch of longer than 30, and that happened week one at Buffalo. So it's hard to say, but I think he has more in the right situation with a good offensive line and where he's not going to be the focal point of the defense. I think he can still do something.
You watched a lot of Le'Veon Bell. How much of it do you think was him? How much do you think it was the offensive line?
I think more of the blame goes on the offensive line, but Le'Veon was admittedly not as motivated as he should have been last year after getting paid. And, you know, his weight was probably an issue early in the season, which is why he came back this year weighing what he said was less than he had, since high school, and 20 pounds less than he did last year. So I think it partially on him, but also it wasn't a good situation for the way he runs the ball. It just wasn't a good fit in Adam Gase's offense, and I think that's on Gase that he never figured out a way how to get Bell involved in other ways. There should have been other ways. You can still see this talent there. There should have been other ways to get him involved.
There's some concerns about adding Le'Veon Bell to your locker room from being around it and the stories that you heard. If you're a contending team, would you have any issues with bringing Le'Veon Bell into your locker room?
I wouldn't. I mean, I think when you look back at everything we heard about Le'Veon Bell before he arrived last year, it was that, you know, he was a diva, he was a problem, and all that stuff. And he was one of the few guys last year. I think he was miserable last year, but I think, you know, he said all the right things to us. He was, you know, trying to convince Jamal Adams not to behave the way he did. He was still trying to keep things together. I don't know what he was like in the actual locker room, but he played it right with us, and he seemed to be respected in the locker room, saying the right things. I think it is a little bit of a warning sign what he did the last few days with the liking stuff on Twitter and kind of, you know, taking shots at Gase. And wanting to get his way out. But I also think, like, he was desperate and frustrated at that point, and it leaves a bad taste. It should leave a bad taste in the mouth of Jets management. I think they think their locker room is better off now, but I also understand where Bell was coming from, and I don't think if he's in a good situation, I don't think those things are going to happen.
Why do you think that he and Adam Gase were never able to get on the same page? I mean, from the outside looking in, it seems like they were a bad mix. They were oil and water from the very beginning. Why do you think that he and the head coach struggled to get on one accord?
Well, basically, when Le'Veon Bell was signed, he was signed by the former GM, Mike Maccagnan, and Mike Maccagnan wanted to add Bell because basically he was under pressure after being here for 4 years and really the team had struggled. He needed to win now, and the Jets hadn't been doing that. And he made that decision. I think Adam Gase had said immediately before they made the decision that he was opposed to it. And that's something that Bell heard, and he probably didn't like it. And Gase and Douglas tried to explain to him, you know, that they still felt there was a place for him. They just had thought that they'd be better off with, you know, a strong offensive line given how weak the team was across the roster. So that probably left a bad taste in Bell's mouth. And then the fact that, you know, Gase wouldn't give him the ball regularly, I think that was what ended up being the bigger issue. Bell said from the beginning that he was fine not getting the ball if the team won. And really, he stayed true to that. The only time he got mad last year was after they played Cincinnati, lost the game to the winless Bengals, and he'd only had like 10 touches. Otherwise, he'd been a pretty good citizen the whole year and didn't really voice any of his frustration. So I think that was the issue, basically Gase calling him out before the season or getting out in public that Gase wasn't happy about the signing. And then, you know, Gase not being able to fit him into the offense. And Gase was probably mad at him for not showing up in proper shape. So there's blame on both sides, but I'd say probably more to Gase than Bell.
Last question here. How much do you think Bell could help you out of the backfield catching the football? I think about Andy Reid's offense, and he's done a really good job with those dual threat, dual purpose backs that can run and also catch the ball out of the backfield. How much do you think Bell still has as a pass catcher?
Yeah, I think he still can run routes. I think he still has a good sense and timing for how to be there for his quarterback if things are getting a little dicey. And I think he's a really, really underrated and good blocker. He picks up the blitz well. He has a great sense for it, and that can be a real asset, especially for a good team with a guy like Mahomes. So I think especially in that situation, he'd be a good fit. I don't think you'd be wise to expect to see the Le'Veon Bell that we saw in Pittsburgh, but I think definitely someone who, on a situational basis, would be able to help you, and someone who would be happy in that role because he just wants to win at this point after such a disastrous time with the Jets.
And that is Andy Vasquez, who covers the New York Jets for NorthJersey.com, also with USA Today. Really appreciate his time coming on today. Let's open up the phone lines, 913-576-7610. I'm very curious where you guys stand. You know where I stand. I am pro Le'Veon Bell. he is going to sign for a veteran minimum deal. We just heard that from Andy Vasquez. I talked to somebody else today, and they said that there's no chance a team gives him more than $1 million this year. To me, it's about attitude. If Le'Veon Bell is coming in and accepting that he's going to be the number two running back, I have absolutely no problem. We also have an update from Sam Bellinger. We'll take your phone calls. Where do you stand on Le'Veon Bell? 913-576-7610. Stick around. It's a drive.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.